Welcome to the Language Mastery Show, a weekly podcast bringing you expert tips for getting fluent anywhere in the world. I'm your host, John Fotheringham. For show notes, visit languagemastery.com/show. Gordon Smith and Cynthia Duran are the dynamic duo behind Lightspeed Spanish, where they teach people Spanish through courses, books, and online lessons. In this conversation, we discuss how Gordon fell in love with Spanish, how Cynthia fell in love with English, and how they both fell in love with each other, how to choose which Spanish accent to learn and tips for mastering Spanish pronunciation, the most common mistakes that English speakers make when learning the Spanish language, how to overcome the fear of making mistakes and get more speaking practice anywhere in the world, and their favorite Spanish language learning resources, including TV shows, Netflix series, etc. All right, enjoy my conversation with Gordon and Cynthia.
Well, I'm very excited today to be joined by Gordon and Cynthia, which I think I said right. She can correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me a bit about what you guys do and how you got into teaching / learning Spanish.
Okay, so primarily we work,
primarily.
We work online and we offer a service of helping people to learn Spanish. So we've done that for about 15 years now. And so we kind of offer a range of services, but primarily we just offer a lot of content. We give a lot of content for people to be able to learn Spanish because it's such a popular language.
So for you, Gordon, how did you get bit by the Spanish bug? You know, what started that journey for you?
Well, it's interesting because obviously we came from different angles. Cynthia was bitten by the English bug. I was bitten by the Spanish bug. What happened was I was working abroad in Morocco. I was working in textiles and I was working in Morocco. I worked there for 4 years. Second language, French. And my French was a disaster. I just didn't have the motivation. And then I moved to Mexico for the next job. And suddenly it was just like a world opened up to me. I heard a language that I loved, that I resonated with. And I just thought, man, I've got to learn this language. Mm-hmm. And of course, the people of Mexico were so lovely. The culture was so lovely. And that helped as well. But it was the language. It was just there's something about it. So I kind of fell in love with Spanish in Mexico.
So Mexican Spanish first, and then you went the other way, which is quite interesting.
I learned Mexican Spanish. I had a Mexican accent. I worked there for only two years, but it was 2 years of immersion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after 2 years, I was kind of fluently making a lot of errors, but fluently making errors. Yeah,
it's like dog years, right? Where two full time immersion years are like 10 years of study years. Right?
Well, yes. absolutely, yeah. Exactly. Because you know, if I'd done that at home 2 hours a week, it would never have happened, you know? So I fell in love with Spanish and all things Spanish. And then, of course, when I came back to the UK and I met Cynthia, who was in love with English and all things English. And so we kind of got together and our two passions for language fused together. And we just said, hey, we're just going to have to start teaching Spanish together.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And that's where it started. It was lovely.
That's true. So Cynthia, tell me a bit more about how you got the English bug and so what brought you to the UK and how your English language journey developed.
Well, I started being terrible at English. I really was terrible. I didn't like it because it didn't make sense. And, you know, I started when I was 9 years old and we had to study at school. So everything was backwards, you know, we say, why is everything backwards or back to front?
Because learn Japanese, so then that'll really make your head go backwards.
Well, you know, like adjectives and things like that, they go the other way around. Because I was so bad at it and I was failing at school. Then I had to go to what we call here in Spain, una academia, like an academy. It's like an after school place that you go to, you know, to go through things that you're not good at school, like maths or whatever.
So it's like a cram school? Would that be the same? Yeah.
Yes, it's like, so after school. And so I went there and I used to go 3 hours a week and I was terrible. But then with time, because I was there for a lot of years, with time I was starting to get better because I was understanding how everything started to work. You know, those moments that you go, oh, okay, that makes sense now. And then suddenly I became the best in my academy class. And from then on, I was obsessed. I needed to learn more words and how they would say this in this place and this other place. And obsessed with watching films or listening to music in English. And I just wanted to go to the UK. I was desperate. Like by the time I was 17, 18, 19, I just wanted to go to the UK, but I never had the chance. I was looking for a job in the UK before I met Gordon. And I nearly went. I had to, you know, to work as a waitress in London. I nearly went, but then I met Gordon online and we chatted.
Yeah, we met in, there was in that period, there were chat rooms.
Yes.
And we met in a chat room called Espanglish Chat, right? And we were friends, but I actually thought Cynthia was a man because her handle was Just In Case. Yeah. Okay. So I just assumed she was a man. So for a while I was saying, hey, I really resonate with that guy. So so nice, you know? And then finally one day Cynthia said, soy una chica. Right.
Game you always changer. Wonder, had you known she was a woman from the beginning, would have it changed how you interacted? And who knows how that could have
changed
the trajectory of your life? He thought I was a man, and his name wasn't that sexy because he was called Daddy or Papi.
Papa.
Dad. Mm-hmm. You know, Dad, you know, it's not like a sexy name. So, mm-hmm. we didn't really tell because
so she thought I was really old, and I thought she was a man. So, but wow. Friendship
low stakes.
Started.
Yeah. There's probably some wisdom in that for anyone listening who's trying to meet a significant other, maybe.
Yeah. Now there's Tindle, but we had a Spanglish chat.
Yeah. You know, but before, back in the day when all of that was like kind of new.
Yeah,
and,
it was fabulous.
And it was nice, you know, to have a place where you could just type. And I remember I spent so many hours talking to people. And I remember that it would be nighttime and then the American people would come because it was like different times. Mm-hmm. So then I would be with the Latin Americans and the Americans. So, yeah. And
sometimes you would sit up all night, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I was obsessed. Everything I could learn, I was like, oh my God, or everything I could practice. And then Gordon invited me over to, well, I actually self-invited.
Auto-invitation.
It was an auto-invitation. And then I went to the UK and I was like, I can't believe I'm finally here after so many years want to come. And then it was fantastic because you wanted to learn, you were learning Spanish, I was learning English. And it was like, wow.
Just a perfect timing, perfect match. It was just fantastic.
It's true.
Yeah. And she didn't go home.
Well, I didn't.
Here we are. you re-imported, you auto imported yourself into Spain.
Yes.
So I have a question because one of the things people often ask me is how do you practice practically with a spouse or a significant other? It seems like an obvious thing, like, right, you know, you want to learn a language, date somebody or marry somebody from that culture, and you'll have all the practice you could ever want. However, the relationship should be the primary focus. And I think often it comes down to maintaining the relationship or practicing the language. You know, I think most people are going to pick the relationship. You probably should, right? So how did you two earlier on, and how do you now kind of balance language practice? You know, do you mostly speak in Spanish? Do you mostly speak in English? Is it a 50-50 split? What's that look
like? Great question. Great. We were just talking about that before we came here. So we've been together for 19 years.
Congratulations.
It's time flies. And in 19 years, we have never faltered in our system, which is 1 week we speak Spanish and 1 week we speak English. So we have two children and they're being brought up as bilingual children. Mm-hmm. But what we do
my next question. So I'm glad you got it to that.
Okay, right. So what the system that we use is this, which seems to work very well. Cynthia and I, depending on the week, and hey, we battle over the week, eh? If somebody's speaking in English, you go, la semana de español, por favor, no? So we have our fixed weeks, but with children, Cynthia only speaks Spanish to the children and I only speak English.
Right.
So the children are growing up in this environment where they see us sharing language, but they only learn from we want to give them a pure accent, obviously.
Sure.
So that's why we do it the way that we do it. Yeah. But we've done that for 19 years and we love it. And I think we're going to do it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't like that at the very beginning, because at the very beginning, when you start learning a language and talking in the other language, it's like you've got to get used to that. Your brain, sometimes you go, I can't take it, and I can't take it anymore. It's like a lot of input. Sometimes your brain just goes, I just want to talk in my language to breathe for a moment.
Right.
So at the beginning, like the first weeks or something, we couldn't manage a whole day in another language.
No.
So at the beginning, we were like, okay, let's do 1 hour in English and 1 hour in Spanish. And then that was manageable. But then we started to realize that we were saying the easy things in the other language and saving the hard parts for your own language. Yeah. So then we thought, right, that's not helping. So we have to, you know, push ourselves. So then we said, right, let's do 24 hours. 24 hours in English. So then you've got to say everything you want to say.
Yeah.
And that's how we started. But we were talking about that at the beginning. It was hard work. Like mentally, we would get headaches. Like we would go, sure. I can't anymore for today.
Yeah.
So totally relate to that. I had a Spanish tutoring session actually before we had this call, and my Spanish is very basic, below A1. But 30 minutes of trying to use 100 words I know to keep that going. I mean, yeah, my brain felt.
Yes.
Like it was melting butter.
Yes.
So I get that.
That's the way. And that's the way it is. And then you get used to it.
It's and you have to do it. You can't skip that. You can't.
Exactly. No.
There's no way around it.
You have to go past it. Yep. And then you think, actually, I've managed a few hours, or actually, I've managed a whole conversation. And then you have, those moments of, oh my God, and I didn't get tired or.
Right.
It's like going to the gym, I suppose, at the beginning, it's or learning to be able to jog, at the beginning, you can do little bursts. And then after a while, suddenly, you know, we were just saying now, we can talk in the other language and it doesn't tire ourselves at all.
No.
Mm-hmm. Whereas before, we tried for an hour each and then we did a couple of hours and then half a day. So we had to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't just jump in.
What was that timeline like going from the hour to a day to... Are we talking years, months?
No. We were
weeks.
weeks. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
But that's pushing yourself, because you start to get comfortable. You go, okay, an hour is comfortable. And that's when you have to go on another level because if not, you just get too comfortable. And like I said, you save the hard conversation for your language time because you can express yourself better.
We also realized that an hour was no good because in an hour we were just warming up. So we said, well, at least we're going to have to do 2 hours or 3 hours so that we get into the flow. Because when you're switching, when you're code switching language, then you do need that at the beginning. You need that little time just to get your speed up, But it probably took us about a month to be able to, or a couple of months, let's say, to get up to doing a week. Yes. We tried 2 weeks and that was just far too long and it wasn't fun anymore. So we plumbed on a week and it works beautifully.
Yeah. But definitely that's with really time, cool. You get there. Like with practice, I know it seems like a cliche, like, oh, practice. But it's true. Your brain accepts all the information and it makes sense. You don't get tired. You don't have to think that much because at the beginning you think a lot. Like you need to translate everything in your head to your language or back. And it makes you tired. My God, that's a lot of work.
It's a four-way job, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like translation. This is what I'm going to say. I'll translate it into Spanish. Then I say it and then I listen and I have to translate that. But then after a little while, then all that happens is it comes directly as one language.
Right. You don't have a translation. Yep. You don't translate anymore. It's just you don't have to translate.
That's when
just,
you know you're getting natural. There, when you're not translating.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's not this, you don't have to do any extra work because it's like if you were your own language. I mean, it's not, but it's like if you were because you're so familiar with it, you don't have to think, how would I say that? I mean, still, we've been talking in the other language for a lot of years and we still have moments of, oh, I don't know that word. Or, we have moments of, what, I don't understand that expression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's normal because learning a language, I think it takes your whole life.
Right. I mean, even native speakers, right? I mean, I learn new English words or phrases almost every day, depending on what kind of stuff I'm reading or listening to.
Exactly.
So I wanted to go back when you were talking, Cynthia, about earlier on in your English journey and you were struggling along and then you suddenly found yourself at the head of the class. What do you think accounted for that shift? Was it just that you became interested and then you then spent more time and energy? Or what was the catalyst for that change?
Well, I think it was just that little by little, one time you'd go, oh, actually the homework was right and it made sense. Like, like a little accomplishment and you go, oh, and then you start to feel more confident and you have those moments of confidence. You go, oh, I'm actually not that bad. And then another day you'd get that right and you go, oh, okay. If you got it wrong, they would explain it to you and then you would go, oh, okay, I get it now. I understand. So it's like little accomplishments you get and you get more confidence. And suddenly because you have more confidence, you talk more.
You take more risks.
You take more risks.
Virtuous cycle.
Exactly. So I think that was really what it was. But to get there, I mean, I was bad for a long time. It's not. It wasn't like a month. We're talking about years because I was in the academy for years. But I mean, it did pay off, I have to say.
Do either of you have any advice for people listening to this who are stuck in that downward spiral of feeling like I'm no good at the language, therefore I don't want to speak it. I'm getting bad marks in school, but they want to get to a place where they're starting to get more wind in their sails and feeling confidence, having some wins. Is it just a matter of sticking it out long enough, or are there any ways you can engineer in some quick wins?
I think the best way of getting Spanish quickly and making it enjoyable, first of all, you've got to be enthusiastic about it.
Yes.
You know, if you're not doing it for yourself, find a reason why you're going to do it. Invent a reason. Most of our students, when we talk about to them about what their motivation is, they always have a point of motivation, whether that's, you know, I want to retire in a Spanish-speaking country, mm-hmm. or I would like to go and live there and work there, or something.
Or find a partner.
Or they have a partner
and they can't talk to them in their language or their family.
Exactly. Yes. Right? Or I have relatives in that country and I can't talk to them.
Yeah, they have a partner and they can talk to the partner because the partner speaks English, but then they go and see the family and they're stuck there like a, you know, yeah. a wet fish. Yeah. So there's always a wet fish. I don't think I made that up. Right. You need a motivation. You need to know why. Be enthusiastic about it. And I think, as you said, John, you know, for me, learning Spanish is like, if I can give a metaphor, it's rolling a rock up a hill. Mm. The rock is bigger than you. So what happens is you can't see the top. You can only see the rock, and it's just hard work, and it's hard work. And what happens is, unfortunately, some people get really near the next level, and they give up because they can't see it. Because mm-hmm. all they can see is the rock. This is too hard, too hard. Just keep pushing, because learning Spanish is not a line like this. It's
exactly
up, flat. And you hit this place where you go, right, the now I'm comfortable, area. The plateau. And then yep. if you stay there too long, it gets boring. But, you know, it's kind of like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, just keep yeah. going, just keep pushing. I talked to a student today and he had a conversation. He was saying, I'm struggling. And then he had a conversation with a guy from Latin America and he chatted in Spanish. And he said, the guy said to me, your Spanish is really good. From that moment, suddenly he reached the top and his whole Spanish has changed. He's got so much more confidence.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, if you just keep going, you'll have a sweet spot moment.
Yes.
You'll get it, you yes. know. But the worst you can do is give up, because you've invested so much time in it. Just keep going. It's worth yeah. it. And, you know, at the end of the day, John, it's not life-threatening. You know, lots of people get so wrapped up in it, like, I've got to do it. It's a fun. It's a hobby. Enjoy yeah. it.
Especially that speaking with another person component,
yes.
I think people forget that not only is that ultimately what most people want to do with the language, you have to practice the skill you want to get good at. I love reading. I love other things, but you can't read your way to spoken fluency. We all know this, but that instantaneous feedback from the other person, it's a narcotic. I mean, it really can put so much into your motivation tank when you have that,
yeah.
even if they don't tell you your Spanish is amazing, even if they tell you your Spanish is awful, it doesn't matter, you know. Not that anyone would ever say that, but...
No.
There was a book that I read called Driving Over Lemons. It's about a guy who moved to Spain and started living there and had to learn language. And he tells the story of how he had a number of conversations that went terribly badly. But then he had one conversation where he was talking to somebody and he said it just flowed and it was wonderful. And that was the turning point for him in Spanish, where he thought, I can have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think... You know, today in the world that we live in, where you can talk to anybody around the world through a screen, many of our students now have partners where they do an exchange 50-50. I'll talk to you for half an hour in English, we'll talk together, and then we'll talk for half an hour in Spanish. That is probably the best way of getting you, accelerating your Spanish.
Yes. Right. I think another thing as well to take into account is expectations. You know, we're talking about like comparing it to going to the gym. It's like that. It's like if you said, well, I want to lose some weight and I want to be fit. I'm going to go to the gym for 2 weeks. And then if I'm not fit, if I don't look like that guy that's been going to the gym for uh-huh. 3 years, then I'm going to quit. So I think some people have the expectation of, well, I'm going to learn Spanish and it's going to take me 3 months. For most of us, it doesn't take 3 months. It takes a long time, longer than that. Some people are really, you know, they have skills for languages and mm-hmm. they pick it up really quickly. And some people take longer. It doesn't mean that, you know.
But that's the minority.
But the minority, right. yeah, the minority are really quick because they are really good at languages, for example. But, you know, most of us, you know, we need our time. But everybody's different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like in a year or in 2 years. It's really, the way you have to look at it is it's going to be a constant thing. Because even the guy that is fit at the gym, if he stops, you know, he has to keep it up. You keep it up and you always learn new techniques and new whatever ways of eating.
Yep.
So it's the same. I think
he doesn't just have the six-pack gene in the same way you don't just have the polyglot gene, you know, like you got to work at it. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, some people go to the gym and in 6 months, maybe they are closer to that body that you would be.
Sure.
You
know? But they still had to go, is your point.
Exactly. Like, but they still had to go. So I think that's another point that, you know, if people just thought, instead of saying, okay, I give myself 3 months, then that's when people quit, when they think that in 3 months I should be this good, you know, because somebody else is this good. Yeah. Just go at your own pace, make it fun, make it interesting. Mm-hmm. Talk to people, visit the country if you can, make it relevant in your life, have conversations in your head.
Sure.
You know, make it fresh and lively and fun.
Use it. And if you haven't got anyone to talk to, use the Elvis method, which I've
got.
If you can't find a partner, use a wooden chair. Talk to anything. You know, just talk. Talk to the dog.
I need to know the story of why that's called the Elvis method. I'm missing a... historical context here. I think.
No, it's just the line from Elvis, you know.
Oh, is it a song?
If you can't find a partner, use a wooden chair.
Is that the Jailhouse Rock song?
Jailhouse Rock.
Yeah, okay. I was like, I couldn't place it. That's a great name for a method. I like that.
Elvis method, yeah. The another thing I'd like to add to what Cynthia said about expectation. I remember when I'd been learning Spanish for 2 years and I was aware that I had a lot of gaps, like amazing amount of gaps, even though I'd had the pleasure of being immersed in it. And I said to somebody, they said, how long have you been learning Spanish? And I said, 2 years. Oh, you must be absolutely fluent now, then, are you? And this is not the only time that I've heard it, and my students have heard it as well. And it's always from people who haven't learned another language. People who haven't learned another language assume that after 2 years, you should be fantastic at it. Yeah. And they can actually bring you down. Yeah. But they have no frame of reference to know whether that's true, what they're saying. Yeah.
Right. I don't know why that is. I mean, maybe it's just because they're thinking, oh, if I took a class on something for 2 years, some other topic, you know, if you study history for 2 years, you're going to know a lot of history.
Yeah.
But that's just because it's just information. It's not a physical skill. Whereas you were to say, I've been playing football for 2 years. You wouldn't expect somebody to be, you know, Pele.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. You'd be like, okay, he's probably okay at football.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think it's kind of the same thing there. Right?
I think all you need to do is look at children, right? Mm-hmm. What do we say about children? Children, they're like sponges. They learn much faster than adults. You talk to a three-year-old or a four-year-old, you're not going to get super high-level conversation. Mm-hmm. They can understand a lot, but they can't express themselves.
Right.
And so, you know, but we put such demands on ourselves, like, oh, 3 years, I should be fantastic. You know, well, check out a three-year-old child and see whether they're fantastic.
That's right.
You'll be 3 years old in Spanish.
In Spanish, that's what I said. That's what I often say to the students. You know, you might be 50, but you've been learning for 3 years, so you're talking like a three-year-old. So don't expect miracles, you know?
That's right. Mm-hmm. The beauty, though, is that you have the vocabulary in your first language of the 50-year-old. You know what photosynthesis means.
Yes.
Exactly. You just have to learn the arbitrary sounds that represent that idea in Spanish or whatever the language is. So So there is an advantage there, but you're so right about expectations. You have to give yourself the time, rig the game to win. So Gordon, you started with Mexican Spanish and then you went to Spanish. What was that like? I know that they're mutually intelligible. Like, you know, there's some vocabulary differences, some pronunciation differences, but you know, it's not like going from Mandarin to Cantonese or something. Like they're pretty similar, right? But I imagine there was a process like of having to adjust your speaking. And where in Spain are you, by the way?
In the center, Madrid.
In Madrid, okay. So yeah, what was that like? What did you have to do to kind of retool your Spanish?
Great question. Because when I came back from Mexico, I had a stonking Mexican accent. You know, it was full on.
Which I'm sure you got teased about by my friends and by Cynthia.
Yeah. So what happened was this. I went to Mexico and my production manager said to me, by the way, here we don't use vosotros. So we just use ustedes for everything. And I thought, fantastic. I won't learn vosotros. And he said, yeah, and we say cerveza. We don't say cerveza. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. That's much easier for pronunciation for me. So that's what I did. So then I came back, met Cynthia from Spain, who uses vosotros all of the time. And I thought, I'm going to have to learn that one. So what was happening? I was teaching together. I was teaching, but I was teaching people who go to Spain, Latin American, Mexican, Spanish. And I thought, this isn't fair. This isn't fair for my students. Mm-hmm. You know, why, you know, I suppose it would be like somebody who wants to move to England and you'd be teaching them the American English, yeah?
Which, I mean, it's still English.
Sure.
Right. I mean, be understood everywhere they go with the English.
But there are differences and there are vocabulary differences and things of that nature. So I said, right, that's it. I said to Cynthia, I'm going to change my accent. So what I did was I got a book.
You didn't really have a choice in the matter because you were living with me.
I know.
At some point you were going to
have to. It was going to have to happen. But I had to do it on purpose because I'd already developed the habit.
Right.
You know, this is why we often say in Lightspeed Spanish, if you're going to do it right from the beginning. Don't get bad habits because once you've got them, boy. Yeah.
Practice makes permanent.
Exactly. Yep. And it took me 3 months to change my accent. And what I had to do was every day for about 10, 15 minutes, I would read out loud and I would autocorrect myself. So as I said, cerveza, I would go, no, cerveza. And I just read, I used a book to do that. And I would read every single day for 3 months. And after 3 months, it finally clicked and it changed. So that's why they're on purpose. And it was a hard job, but it was worth it. And obviously, you know, the Spanish accent is very different to the Mexican, not just in saying cerveza and cerveza, but it's also the tonality. Spanish tonality is a lot stronger. The J, for example, and the R's are a lot stronger, you know? So I had to kind of adjust that as well. That was a longer job. But
is the double L different also?
No, I think the double L is the same in Mexican and Spanish. It's the J sound.
But here in Spain, it's more leaning toward the J sound, like llamar. In there, I would maybe hear llamar, it's softer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The Mexican pronunciation is softer in general. I think
the Mexican is softer with, for example, the J and the G. You know, they say more her and we say more G, for us.
In Spain, gente, and in Mexico,
Oh, interesting. Like so it's more guttural.
Yeah, it's more her and we are more he. So that's another.
So I recall when I met Cynthia, I couldn't take my eyes off her mouth because she kept sticking her tongue out when she was speaking.
You told me that the other day. I was like, yeah, I sound like a snake or something when I was talking. You had your tongue out all the time. But
when you said cerveza, I could see your tongue and I'd spent 2 years not seeing anybody's tongue. It's going, So, yeah, it's quite significantly different. The whole way that Spanish people speak is different.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic because I think it can be both underplayed and overemphasized. Both can be true. I think on the one hand, for a new Spanish learner, we would want to say, oh, be careful, because if you learn that Spanish, you're not going to be able to communicate. No, as you said, just like you and I, we can understand each other perfectly, with the rare exception of what word was that. There's one maybe word that we might not know or something.
Yeah.
So your students then, they're learning Spanish, you know, I assume, predominantly. Do you think it is important to pick one dialect, especially in the beginning, and focus on that based on one's goals? Or do you think it's best to start with the Spanish of Spain and then have that as a foundation and then later kind of specialize in maybe another dialect?
I would say usually people who learn the language already are learning a language because of something. So either they're holiday in Spain or they have family somewhere. So I think obviously if you go to Spain or if you go to Mexico or Guatemala, try to get someone from that place because it'll be easier for you then to understand. Again, I mean, it doesn't really matter what Spanish you learn because then at the end of the day, it's Spanish and then you just have to adjust. It'll just be easier if you just go straight for that. And then what people usually do when they get better at it, and then that's when they say, oh, and in Mexico, they'll say this, or in, you know, in Guatemala, they'll say this. In Peru, they say this. They are open to the other Spanishes. Can I say Spanishes? The other types of Spanish. So that's the way I've seen it go with people. They usually pick one either because they like the sound of it or because whatever reason they have, or they have family there or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they expand their knowledge with the rest. Because obviously, you know, you can't isolate yourself. You're always going to talk to other people from other places that speak Spanish. It's hard that you just speak with people from the UK, for example, and never from the US or Canada or Australia. You know, there are films, there are series. You're always going to be listening to other accents. But yeah, I would say easy to pick one first. And then build on that.
And I would add to that, what we find here is that because saying cerveza is easier than cerveza, then lots of people go for the easy route. So lots of people who come to Spain would learn Latin American Spanish. All I would say is, you know, whichever region that you choose to go to, probably that's the accent that you want to get at the beginning. After that, you do what you like. But it really doesn't matter, as you say, John, If you learn Spanish from Spain and then you go over to Argentina and Uruguay, everyone's going to understand 99% of what you're saying. And every now and again, you're going to say, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, it's the same. Spanish isn't one definitive Spanish. That's the issue. It's like, you know, the English language. How many different accents and dialects do we have? So in Spanish, it's the same. So, we get a lot of people who are very, very, you know, I don't want to learn Spanish from Spain. Well, where do you want to learn it from? Because you can't say Spanish from Latin America, because that is just, the most, you know, broad thing
that
ever.
That isn't one thing, right? Right.
It's not
it's multiple things.
Argentinian Spanish has nothing to do with Mexican Spanish in sound and in conjugation of the verb, for example.
And doesn't have a lot of Italian influence, I think.
Yes.
But even here in Spain, if you go down and live in the south of Spain, you're going to have a completely different accent to the one I use. I remember asking, a lady came to one of my classes in the UK, and she'd lived in the south. And I said to her, ¿Cuánto tiempo llevas allí en el sur? You know, how long have you been in the south? And she said, tres años. Right? Now, tres años. I was like, woo, that's an accent. I think we can tell, yeah. Obviously, in Madrid, it would be tres años. Yeah.
But
so even within a country, you're going to have tremendous differences of accent. So choose the area that you, if you want to retire to a place, choose that.
Do either of you have a kind of pet favorite accent within the Spanish speaking world?
I love Argentinian Spanish. Okay. I think it's really sexy. I mean, I like all of them, but I like Argentinian. Mm-hmm. I think people from Spain really love Argentinian Spanish for some reason. I think it sounds, I don't know, sexy for some reason. I think it sounds like Italian.
Yeah. It's got a bit of woo.
Yeah. Pizzazz.
That'd be my favorite if I had to choose.
Yeah.
And for you?
I like all of the accents. Obviously, I've got my heart kind of goes with Mexican when I hear them.
It's your first love, right?
Yeah. Lovely. It's lovely, yeah. But now for me, because I live in Spain, Mexican sounds a little bit overly soft for me now. You know, it's a little bit too played down. But I really, really like listening to the accents in the south of Spain, because there's some really way outlandish ones. The ceceo, when they're doing the ceceo and everything. Yeah,
that's true. Gata. That's true. Yeah. Like the weird ones.
I like the ones I want it. But in the accent in Cadiz, I particularly like. It's a really nice accent in there. Right.
Where was that?
Cadiz. Cadiz, we would say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
In on the tip of Spain at the bottom next to
Gibraltar.
So switching gears a little bit now, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see new learners make? And this can be specifically mistakes in Spanish, you know, like English interference problems, or methodological mistakes or psychological mistakes.
Okay, well, I think the big one at the beginning is that they bring the pronunciation of their own language to Spanish.
Yeah, especially the vowels, right?
The vowels, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the vowels are very, you know, there are so many sounds in English.
14.
I mean, it depends also which country you're from.
Right.
There are different sounds sometimes for the vowels.
Yep.
But in Spanish, I mean, the vowels are really easy. I mean, to learn how to read Spanish is really easy because it's phonetic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can read without knowing what you're reading, but you can't do that in English, because a word can be pronounced in lots of ways. But sometimes they bring that pronunciation. For example, the double L, they'll pronounce it as an L.
Right.
Or the CH.
Me llamo Gordon.
Yeah.
I lick myself. I'm cold. Yeah.
So I think that's what takes a little longer at the beginning. Like, just, you know, forget about the pronunciation. And the R, not because in England they don't tend to pronounce the R. In the US they do. It's like a stronger R in the sounds. But in England they try to draw the vowel before. So for example, coche, they say car. They don't say car. You know, they don't pronounce the R is like non-existent really.
Yeah.
And I go, no, you have to pronounce everything that you can see.
Yeah.
So things like that the beginning. That, I think that's the hurdle that.
Yeah.
They have to go through with pronunciation.
And just to add to that, I think what I've heard lots and lots of students say that, look, I just want to learn the language. You know, I'm not going to copy the accent.
Mm.
Right. And I think that's a big error because
When
here in Spain, I can't speak for other countries, but here in Spain, if you copy the Spanish accent, even if your Spanish is faulty, but your accent is good, you will get 100% more compliments. The idea is to hablar sin acento, to speak without an accent from your old language.
Mm.
That is like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for Spanish speakers. So I think people don't put enough importance on getting the pronunciation right.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors. I think maybe a lot of it is people feel silly or mm-hmm. they feel like,
yes,
you know, they're putting on an act or even being yeah. offensive. I don't know if it's racist comedians that do weird impersonations or something and they somehow feel like they're doing that same thing. But I agree. Accent is everything.
I had a student who was extremely posh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he would talk in Spanish extremely poshly. Yes. And he said to me, Gordon, I need help. I went to buy some sugar and the man didn't understand what I said. And I tried to explain over and over again and I came out and I didn't have any sugar. And I said, tell me what you said.
Is that what it? What
tell
did
me
you
what
say?
You said. And he said, por favor, quiero azúcar.
Azúcar, right? Azúcar.
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 I said, well,
no idea what azúcar is.
You know, yeah, that's not
four
Spanish.
Words and
I'm sorry.
At least 30 things going wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, I said, it's just, you know, you're just not pronouncing it the way that you won't know what that word is. It's right. Azúcar. Cynthia had a student who went into in the morning at something, 8 o'clock in the morning, and asked for a bocadillo, which is a baguette, yeah? And he was given a vodka with ice, right? Because it sounded like vodka hielo.
I said, well, what do you say? He said, un vodka-dilo. He said, vodka-dilo. And okay. I was like, that sounds like vodka y hielo, like vodka and ice.
Eight o'clock in the morning. Said,
there you are.
So I just drunk it and I went off. He said, I was too embarrassed not to drink it. So I just, you know, the waiter's probably thinking,
and now the whole neighborhood thinks he's
like these
yeah,
English
a lush.
That's
so
how
fun.
You learn that it's bocadillo.
Yeah.
Sometimes you learn the hard way, which is like, I didn't get what I wanted.
Right.
And I think the other area that I think people could focus on is once you learn something, then trying to undo that is very bad. So if you're going to get a teacher, make sure you get a good teacher. You know, make sure you get somebody who understands about the language and who's going to teach you something in a correct way.
And because will correct you. I think that's often a problem is, you know, they don't want to hurt your feelings. Maybe you don't respond very well when they do correct you. And so it just doesn't happen. And then you just solidify those mistakes.
Yeah.
Of course. And listen, on a psychological level, John, we've had endless amounts of students who have learning difficulties. And what I mean by that is that they've had such bad experiences in school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With not understanding something, children laughing at them, the teacher making fun of them.
Yep.
Maybe people who are dyslexic who have this mega down on themselves about learning. And so I think this struggle, they're so scared to speak because they're worried that if they speak and they make a mistake, people are going to laugh at them. And that's something that, you know, we also help students to try and get over that, to understand that it's kids that laugh. Adults tend not to, you know, it's not a common thing in the class. Ah, ha, 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 look what you said. No, it doesn't happen.
No.
You know, we're normally, we can control ourselves, but it's this old fear, you know, and I think people really should work on that as well, you know, get any help that they can to get over that fear of it's okay to make a mistake. It's not life-threatening. Mm-hmm. And you learn more from your mistakes than you ever do from your successes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay to laugh. I mean, sometimes we've laughed. I've said things in English that, you know, I don't know why, but every time I've made a mistake, I ended up saying something sexual. It's always the case. It's like, what did I say? I just hear people laughing, looking at me, and I'm like, what have I said? And then you go through your everything you said, you go, what did I say?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all right to laugh. You know, if you make a mistake and it's something funny that you've said because it sounds funny or it sounds sexual because it's going to be sexual, I'll tell you that. Then, you know, laugh. And it's like, doesn't matter. You know, we're here to learn. Doesn't matter. We can laugh about it. And then that's how we learn as well.
But those moments are the moments you remember.
That's right.
You never make that mistake again.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Yep. I've learned the hard way as well. I had a couple of experiences. One time, well, I learned the difference between invalid and invalid, the hard
That's
way.
A good one. Yep.
And I learned that to have it off, at least in England, is to have sex. So when I said, this weekend, I'm going to have it off, then I had lots of people laughing at me and thinking, wait, I was like, whoa.
Well done, round of applause.
Yeah, good for you. Way to plan ahead.
Laughing as well. He was laughing more than anybody there. And I thought, okay, I obviously said something I shouldn't have said.
Yeah, well, Gert said, that's a verbal contract. You said it, so that's...
You said
hold
it,
you to
so.
It.
Just that's sign right. this bit of paper here.
That's right, yes. Going back to dialects of English, even, my wife lived in New Zealand for about 5 years, and She learned the hard way that the word bonk in New Zealand does not mean the same thing as here in the States. All you know, like we'll say like I bonked my head or I was working out and I bonked during the workout. I totally ran out of energy. But their bonk is similar to
what you were just talking about.
In the UK.
Is it the same? Yeah, okay. Bonk well, that, is that, yeah. Well, there we go.
You can bonk somebody on the head, but I was working out in the gym and I bonked. Well, that's definitely.
That's quite a gym. Yeah. Where do you work out? I gotta check this place out.
Is that a subscription gym or is it?
Yeah, right. So after pronunciation, you know, bringing in your anglicized vowels and things, are there other common mistakes that you guys have seen and things we can try to hopefully avoid and miss those potholes if we can?
Yeah, I think one is your study schedule. The truth of the matter is if you think that you can learn a language studying 2 hours a week, it's not going to happen. You will learn some, but you won't get to any level. You'll be forgetting it. It's like learning language is like filling a bucket that's got a hole in the bottom.
Mm.
You've got to fill it faster than the stuff's coming out of the bottom.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah. And so if you do 2 hours a week, unfortunately, it's run out of your bucket by the next week. I mean, we've had it, students, you know, the following week and you say, well, last week we talked about the present perfect. And you see this look of glazed look of really, did we?
Yeah. Can we go over that again?
So what we always suggest to people is that it would be better for you to do 10 minutes a day, every day, than 2 hours a week. 10 minutes, the mind loves short bursts of attention. It thrives on them. If you try and study for 2 hours, an hour and a half of it, you're not really going to take much in. But if you do, you know, 10, 15 minutes of something you really like, you'll remember that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a common mistake that people make. I'll do 3 hours and that'll be me.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
Little and often.
Yep. Yeah. And it also builds the habit then too. I mean, you start off with anybody can fit 10 minutes in a day. I don't care how busy you are. You can find 10 minutes, you know, 10 minutes less on Netflix or Instagram. You can find those 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'd also say that it's important to speak as soon as you can. You know, you get too comfortable with grammar and writing things because it's easier.
Safe.
You've got it's safe. You've got time to think about it. You've got time to correct yourself. When you're talking, you don't have that time. It's like it's happening now. So I think building the habit of talking and practicing that as well. And it's another skill. It's a completely separate skill.
100%. Yeah. When would you advise people to start? Because this is kind of a contentious issue in the language world, right? Of do you speak from day one? Do you go through the so-called silent period and put it off until you quote unquote feel ready?
In my beginner's classes, I always aimed in the very first class, I would get them to stand up and say hello in Spanish to one another, shake hands, just do the greetings. In the first class, language is expanding your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your comfort zone's not expanding, it's shrinking. And so, you know, if you're learning Spanish and you're thinking, I know you mentioned this quiet time, and I know children have that. They don't speak for a while and then suddenly they speak. But if you have quiet time and you're stressing, your comfort zone's it's getting worse. This is getting worse. You think at some point I'm going to have to speak, but I don't want to. No, if you start straight away and, you know, and obviously you've got to coach these people and say, well, let's try and say that in a better way. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not getting that vowel right, shorten that vowel up. But I think straight away, for me, straight away, let's get into it. At the end of the day, we spend 90% of our time speaking and listening, if not more. I mean, probably 90% because we do a lot of this now. But when you actually look at people's study habits, they tend to spend 80% of the time reading and writing. Yeah. And not even 90% reading and writing and 10% speaking. They need to flip that around.
At the beginning, I guess, if you don't know the sound, you can't talk because even if you read, you don't know how to say what you're reading. At the very beginning, you can listen to Spanish. I don't know, tape or whatever tape. They're not tapes anymore.
Tape. Like, how old are you, Cindy?
8-track.
You know, listen to whatever. And then you can repeat it. You know, you can see it written. You can hear it, repeat it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you need to talk to someone. You can just talk to yourself in your head or just talk out loud.
Right.
Just
or hear to your phone. I mean, like with things like Siri and Alexa, like you can actually practice speaking to zero stakes. You know, your phone's definitely not going to laugh at you. You know, adults won't either, but your phone will.
Hopefully not.
Siri might be like, pardon, I didn't get that.
Siri might go, I'm sorry, you didn't say that one.
So, I mean, not, you don't need anyone at the beginning. You can just talk to yourself. But it's just the action of putting it out there.
Right, and moving your tongue, your larynx, and your lips. And
exactly. Absolutely. When you get a little bit more confident and you go, okay, I think I can manage now a little bit of whatever conversation, just, you know, even if it's very simplistic, then you start to talk to other people, even if, you know, easy topics.
Sure.
Let's not go into your politics or whatever that, but easy topic. What have you done today? What did you eat? You build on for that. But it's just, it's an error that I made myself. You get too confident with all the writing stuff. And when I went to the UK, I was really good at grammar in English. Mm-hmm. I went to the UK and I had a shock because then I had to talk and I wasn't prepared.
You hadn't practiced it, right?
I had, I mean, in class, but how many hours in class? Like, and you know, there are more people in class. It's not just you. So you get like, what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes of talking?
Right.
And so when you go there and you're alone and you have to talk, because back then we didn't do, you know, I'm talking about 20 years ago, we didn't really have the one-to-one thing, Skype, you know, it wasn't, we didn't have all of that. No. I don't remember. You know, at the beginning you have a shock. You can avoid all that if you, at the beginning, you get used to talking.
And I think especially with the reading versus listening dichotomy here, when you focus on listening first, you don't develop those bad pronunciation habits where you see what something's spelled like and assume it's pronounced a certain way when it's actually not. And that's true of every language, right? I mean, even in English, you know, there's so many words that you can tell a kid likes to read a lot because he'll pronounce words a way that they look like they're spelled, but actually they're not. Okay, so immersion is kind of a big deal. That's a big thing I focus on a lot in my writing and books and things. Now, obviously moving to Mexico or to Spain, wonderful if you can do it. Not everybody has that option, or maybe not yet. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I like to talk a lot about is how you can bring immersion to you, right where you are at home, in your car, wherever. So if somebody's listening to this and they want to immerse themselves in Spanish on a daily basis, what are some tools, resources, methods, things you'd recommend for them to try to get more Spanish into their life?
Okay. Once you're fairly comfortable with how it should be pronounced, I would suggest that you can start reading out loud. Right, lots of people read, but they don't. It doesn't matter what level it is. You can get a child's book. Read out loud. Mm-hmm. That is one of the fastest ways of getting yourself accustomed to speaking Spanish. We've had our students who were struggling. I said, look, just start reading out loud every day, 10 minutes, read out loud. And listen, you pick up a loop, listen and hear what you're saying and correct it. And within weeks, there's this massive change because you're not going to make any mistakes because you're reading good text. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one way of kind of immersing yourself in Spanish and getting the chance to speak, even if you're on your own.
Right.
The same as Cynthia said, if you're driving, obviously, you can listen to podcasts and all of that, like yours, John, or like, you know, tons. But listen to Spanish and repeat it as they say it. Mm-hmm. Put it on slower on the playback and repeat it. Those kind of things. Obviously, we've got, you know, Duolingo. We've had students who've had a fantastic level just working on Duolingo. Obviously, written, speaking, Duolingo is not very powerful for that. But if you imagine you did Duolingo or one of those, Babel or whatever it is, and then you're listening and repeating and you're reading out loud, very quickly you would get that sorted.
I think another way that you can try is, in some areas, they already exist, you know, like cafes that you can go to and have like a one-to-one.
Mm.
There are some evenings
language that
you say
cafes,
language
yeah.
cafes. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be prepared also to talk in your language, you know, so you both benefit, you know, like a give and take. That's another option if you want to talk to people and meet people. And then those people can become friends, you know, and they just talk to them.
Maybe their spouse / business partner some days. Who knows?
Exactly.
Right? Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. And the world is your oyster when it comes to language. Yeah.
And I think also in the US, there's a big community of Latin Americans. There's more opportunities there, for example, than somebody in the UK. There are not.
But even so, for example, I've got friends in Edinburgh and there's tons of Spanish people in Edinburgh, you know. So
well, in big places, you can find ways.
I know on Facebook, they've got language exchange groups and you can look in your area and you can find, you know, people who want to exchange language.
Yeah. And if in your area there isn't one, you can make it yourself. You can say, right, you can talk to the cafe and say, can we have an evening of language exchange? And lots of people would want to do it.
Audiobooks as well. Lots of audiobooks, you know, of a book that you've already read in English, you know.
Right. So you know the context.
You know the story, and then that helps a tremendous amount.
So I mean there's lots of ways to put you out there with Spanish and become more social as well.
Are there any specific shows or movies or podcasts or things that you guys or your students have particularly liked?
In Netflix now, there are lots of series in Spanish.
Yeah,
you know,
La Casa de Papel.
That's like a good one. Heist. Yeah.
They watched that one.
Yeah.
I mean, there was
a
Money Heist
Spanish
in English.
Version of that. So which one?
I think it's Money Heist in English, just for
Money Heist. Okay. Watch that one. Las Chicas del Cable, something like that.
Las Chicas del Cable.
They watch that. I mean, that's the series they tell me they watch.
Yeah.
There were a few series that they were watching. El Internado, I think it was.
And the secret is this. Very important. If you're going to watch a film or a series or whatever in Spanish, you must have the subtitles on in Spanish, not in English.
Yes.
Right? Because in English, you're just going to read the English.
You're reading English, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you need to, you can watch it first in English, have the English overdubbed and or with the English subtitles, then watch it again in Spanish with the Spanish subtitles. All it's doing is it's teaching your brain that sound, that word, that sound, that word.
Yes. Yeah? On Spotify as well, there are lots of podcasts you can listen to. And I mean, anywhere really, something in Spanish.
The best way, though, I would suggest for anyone who wants to listen is always listen with a transcript at the beginning. And then when you follow it along, boy, that makes a massive difference. Your mind's loving it, going, right now, I know what that sound is. I know what that structure is now.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to look things up and search for things. And one thing I've done in the past is I'll get a tutor online, something like italki, and then I will literally pay, you know, during the session. So I'm paying them for their time. I'll have them create the transcript for something if there isn't one. You know, if there's like a podcast I like or some bit of audio that doesn't have text, I'll just pay them to create it, or vice versa. Here's some text I have. I want the audio. So can you just read this out really and I'll record it and then I can listen to that later.
Yeah.
We found a brilliant resource because it's always been an issue transcribing audio. Yeah. We found a thing called Happy Scribe. We use it. And I would say it's about 98%, 99%.
That's impressive.
I think that's a lot. Maybe I'll be in there with 90 something. But maybe
still,
yeah, 90. Yeah,
but it's that's really, really good. But, Happy Scribe. And, you know, you might get the odd word that's out of place or the punctuation wrong. But, you know, that can really help. Really.
And this is something that you upload an audio file or you
speak? You upload the audio file.
Got it. And then it
I think you just pay. You can pay credits. You know, it's not expensive. And you just upload your audio file. It gives you the transcription and that's
And the translation.
And the translation.
Well,
very cool.
Yeah,
I'll check that out. Is there anything you guys have changed your minds about on language acquisition, on teaching?
Well, I mean, we always change as we look, because we learn as well. We learn how to teach better. We learn through questions. Sometimes we get fantastic questions and I don't know the answer. Even if it's my language, I go, I don't know why we say it that way.
Right. You know what, but not why. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've learned a lot about my language through questions that people have asked me. So, I mean, with that, we're always learning, because even now, some people will ask me something and I go, what a brilliant question. I don't know. I have to find that out. Yeah. So with things like that, constantly we're trying to improve ourselves.
I have learned that English has a lot of problems. And a lot of the problems we have when we're learning Spanish is because of the English. And I wouldn't have said that before. How dare you? How does it use it? That's a problem with English. How dare you? Yeah. And I realize now, because English is a fusion of many languages.
Right.
And Spanish is a lot purer because of the Latin, you know, Spanish has, in terms of rules and regulations, it's much easier to follow than English.
Right.
And so, I kind of now understand that why people have so many problems with translating, especially when they're doing the manual translation, there can be a disaster.
I have a great deal of empathy for English learners. I am so grateful that I got it for free. I mean, in quotes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's got the different difficulties, you know. Learning Spanish has some difficulties, like, for example, the verb conjugations, you know, all of the tenses, which is easier in English because
we got rid of it.
I do, you do, you know.
Yeah, thanks, Vikings.
Things like that, those are really easy things. But then, for example, pronunciation is easier in Spanish because it's, you know,
phonetic,
so it's easier. In English, really hard.
Yeah.
But then some things, you know, when you want to translate, it's like, oh, I can see there's like a little flaw in the English, like a fault here. That's something missing. I
remember Cynthia saying to me,
because it doesn't make sense.
When do you say the and when do you say the?
The, said, yeah.
The, no, we don't say the. That's old English. Yeah. That's old English. What about the orange? Oh, my. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed we do. Yeah.
Or emphasizing, yeah, he was the guy.
Yeah, the man.
And then she
asked me once, why is it that you can say it's 5 past the hour, but you can't say it's 6 past the hour? You've got to say it's 6 minutes past the hour. You can't say it's 6 past, but you can say it's 5 past. You can say it in the multiples of five. And mm-hmm. these are like just weird things that mm-hmm. you either know or you don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a challenge with English. Whereas in Spanish, it tends to be just a little bit more ordered.
Yeah, more intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Spanish will be harder.
Spanish has a difficult start at the beginning, and then it gets easier.
And then it's easier.
English has an easy start, and then it gets more difficult.
Yes, I think
that's a very interesting way to put it. Yes.
It's a shallow learning curve in English. Then it's a steep learning curve in Spanish, but then
exactly I think if you go past, you know, the hard part of Spanish, then from then on everything starts to make sense and you can put it falls into place. With English, it's the other way around. It's easy, you know, conjugating verbs easy, and then it gets harder and harder as you keep on going.
Well, that's encouraging to hear, because I'm still definitely in that steep part at the beginning. So
absolutely,
it will get easier for sure.
Well, speaking of encouragement, just to kind of wrap up here, if somebody's listening and they are absolutely complete beginner, they've never learned a foreign language before, what would you tell this person? How would you encourage them to make that first step out into the abyss?
I would say, just do it, because learning a language is going to be the best thing that you've ever done in your life. From what we've seen and our experience as well, learning language opens so many doors for you.
Yes.
It allows you to meet so many beautiful people. And, you know, in many ways, and it, you know, whether it be business, whether it be relationship, friendships, you learn another culture. It opens your mind. We've always said that if everybody went and learned another language, racism wouldn't exist in this world.
Yeah.
Because you just know that you discover that these are beautiful people. They're the same as you. You learn new cultures. You know, it is probably the best thing I've ever done in my life. And I would say to everybody, just do it. Yeah, get through the hard bit. It's tough. So what? Mm-hmm. You know, everything's tough. Life's tough. Get over it.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it and have some fun with it.
It gives you other perspectives in life, different ways to look at the same thing, because other languages express themselves differently.
Yeah.
They look at things differently. So when you have both languages, suddenly you have two ways of dealing with something, solving problems.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's good for everything in your life. There's nothing bad about learning another language.
And it reduces the possibility of having Alzheimer's as well.
Exactly. I mean, for your brain as well, brain activity,
brain
fantastic.
Workout.
Exactly. So I think it's all positive. It has moments of frustration, of course. Everything. Yeah. You're going to have three, and you go through those. That's a part of life. Life is happiness and some moments of frustration. Learning a language is the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's part of the learning process.
It's the hero's journey, isn't it?
The hero's journey.
It so is. Thank you for bringing up Joseph Campbell, my guy.
Absolutely.
Just do it and you'll love it.
Well, thank you both so much for sharing your journey and your tips, and wonderful chatting with you both.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We'll have to split a cerveza if you're part of the world.
When you're here in Spain, come and we'll have a drink.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you for listening to the Language Mastery Show. Again, you can find show notes at languagemastery.com/show. Before you continue on with your day, take a quick moment to choose one small tip or takeaway from today's episode to apply in your life. Listening to podcasts is a great first step, but the real magic only happens when you translate information into action. Also, if you want to help keep this show going, there are 3 key things you can do to help. Number 1, leave a 5-star rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever app you use to listen to podcasts. Number 2, join my free newsletter called Language Mastery Monday, in which you get weekly tips, tools, and resources for building an effective language immersion environment anywhere in the world. And number 3, if you're learning Japanese or Mandarin Chinese, check out my detailed immersion guides called Master Japanese and Master Mandarin. Both provide step-by-step instructions for how to immerse yourself in Japanese or Chinese right where you are. Learn more at JapaneseMastery.com and ChineseMastery.com.
And you can use the code SHOW, that's S-H-O-W, to get 25% off either guide. All right, we'll see you next week for another episode of the Language Mastery Show. Until then, happy learning.